Right, good evening. Welcome to the 12-Man Podcast. Live on Facebook and all the good places you listen to your podcasts on Spotify, Amazon, Deezer, Apple, all the good places that everybody knows really. You Google us, you'll find us. Got me, Steve Jackson, I'm your host for the evening. I keep saying main host. I don't know why I keep saying main. I'm your main host. Got Mr. John Donovan with us live from Spain again. Have you got a glass of red wine?
I haven't, no. I've just been out for some Mexican food, so I might nip out and get a bottle of cold water because it's hot. My mouth's still hot. It's like a Glastonbury Festival fire eater's mouth.
Oh, don't be mentioning Glastonbury. Them tickets upset a lot of people this weekend, so yeah. I'll say nothing about that. And when you said nip out, I thought you were going to say the toilet. I thought, well, can't be that.
No. And by the way, I know you said main horse, but if your throat does pack up, just give me a wave and I'll try and carry on for you.
I'll do so much. I was going to say a code word, but there's no point because I won't be able to say it. It'll be something. But yes, we've got two guests on this week. I'll go for our main one. I keep calling you a journalist, but you're a writer now. You're an author. Mr. Anthony Vickers is with us. Evening, Vic.
Hiya.
How are we doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah. A bit cold. A bit chilly around the Trossachs, but good.
Yeah, John Don, bring some sun back when you come back on Wednesday, please.
I would love to, but it's not looking promising, is it?
No, telling me it's not. I'm not having this de-icing my car in the morning. It's not happening. It's doing me head in. But Vic's on with us, so he's going to talk to us about his new book. If you haven't been to the down to the club shop or online to buy it yet, he'll tell you all about it and how you must have it for Christmas. It's a great read, by the way. And last but not least, all the way from lovely Australia, big smile on his face, Rye's with us. Evening, Rye.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good sunny, bright mornings.
You say good morning. What time is it there as we speak?
It's just gone 6 a.m. here, mate. Bright and ready to go. And, I'm wide awake.
Wide awake. Good. You well?
Yeah, doing really well. Thank you so much. Yeah, just, hating international breaks as always, Jacko. Worst 2 weeks of my life. We've had three, is it, already? Silly thing. Yeah. But, can't wait for it to be over. Last one till March now. So just bring back the bar right now.
Yes, last one till March. We've got 4 months of, full steam ahead now. This is where the business starts. So, we'll chat to Rye about his little bits and pieces that he's got going on. Obviously, his favourite Aussie players. A little bit of an update on his best mate and where he is on Fight Scanner. He'll tell you about that. We'll talk about all that stuff and, we'll get everybody's opinions and stuff about their favourite players. So before we start, are we all well? Are we all good?
Yeah, we're well.
Good. Yeah, we're good, mate. Good. Very well.
Good. John Don, how have you spent your international break? How have you found the international break?
I was lucky enough to be able to get flights from the UK to Spain, and I've been out here 8 days, and I come home Wednesday. I've caught the England games on the telly over here, and I've obviously kept up to date with things that have been happening at the Borough and the trials and tribulations of our players on international duty. So, during the day I've been. It's been okay over here. So I've been outside doing bits and bobs outside. I've enjoyed it. It's been a nice switch off away from work and enjoying a little bit of warm weather.
That's like rubbing it in, is
there? Sorry.
Absolutely freezing here. But Vic, welcome. Good to have you on again. Could be regular occurrence this, but I think it's your third appearance with us now. But obviously you've got a new book. What do you make before you talk about your new book? Third international break, as Ryan was mentioning there. Did we really need three international breaks before the middle of November?
Well, it's part of the Federation's determined push to squeeze every penny out of every player and play them into the ground until they drop. It's ludicrous. I mean, obviously, the proliferation of new countries in Europe has made a difference to the size of the qualifying group. But there's also a turf war going on between UEFA and FIFA, which means there's absolutely no downtime. At the end of this season, there's the ridiculous World Club Cup, which is being mandated by FIFA, and you're going to get the top players effectively get no downtime now. And physically, that has to have an impact. You know, these lads are fit, but your body just cannot sustain that workload continuously. And there's some players now who haven't had a rest for 18 months. And for me, it's as the employers have a duty of care to the players. And what they're doing, I think, is incredible. I mean, it's cynical. It's, you know, money grasping, but also it's a serious health risk to some very expensive assets. And I can see a major schism between the clubs who pay for the players and the federations that are making money out of them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, to be honest. I mean, I think it was more ironic that the person that was, I suppose, heading the threat of legal action, Rodri, was the one that actually broke down. He's the one that got the injury really quickly in the season. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's no coincidence that every manager is now complaining about a ridiculous injury list. Because the players don't get any recovery time, and they're fitter and faster than ever before. The game is fitter and faster. There's more turning, there's more sprinting, and bodies are completely at the top end of their performance levels every week. And it's no surprise at all that we get a massive injury crisis at clubs at every level.
So, Vic, what do you think of Harry Kane's comments then regarding the pullouts from the England squad?
Well, I think a lot of the players would be under pressure from their clubs, because it's very rarely that you get a player who is 100%. They're always carrying niggles. They've always got little knocks, little strains, and their clubs will be saying to them, look, the most important thing for you is to play for us who pay your wages. And if you're only 92% because you've got a bit of a problem with your shin, don't go. And that's always been the case. I mean, Alex Ferguson used to put so much pressure on players not to go away for friendlies. I mean, Ryan Giggs never played a Wales friendly while he was at Man United.
Well, I just thought it was, a little bit two-faced of Harry Kane. I mean, he's pulled out of squads previously with minor niggles, you know. So yeah, I know he's England captain, spokesman, I suppose. I just thought it was a little bit, a bit rich of him to condemn others for doing it.
Well, yes, and he's probably been in that position himself before. But if it had been a World Cup semi-final, not one of those players would have been unfit. I guarantee that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the most ironic thing, isn't it? You know, the call he's count, pointless friendlies, but, you know, For me, I get where Harry's coming from, but it's like you said, you know, the season's been stretched. I mean, you've got the Champions League group stages or whatever the hell that's called. Not ending till February this season. You've got, more games being crammed in. You say, like you said, the Club World Cup, where there's 32 teams going to be contesting that. Yeah, it's not viable for me. It can't go on like that, especially in between international tournaments. It's not good. And there's also an African Cup of Nations in January as well, which we can't forget about. So there's another one.
The FA Cup, the greatest, oldest cup competition in the world. They've scrubbed replays there, haven't they? They took a cash incentive away from a lot of lower league teams just to look after the elite.
Wrong.
Ridiculous.
Wrong in every way. I completely forgot about that when I saw teams had won on penalties the other week in the first round. I thought, what's going on here? But I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it. You should always have that. The beauty of the third round replay, you know, some of the fixtures that pop up is magic. And unfortunately, we've had that taken away from us
It's going to make cup upsets less frequent now. You know, and we used to love them. We all loved a good cup upset.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, that's not good. It's not good. Right, I'll quickly come to you before I start helping Vic fill everybody's Christmas stockings. have you bubble wrapped Riley? Have you sent him back?
Ooh, I tried to. I tried to do my best, but no. He's obviously flown to Melbourne. He played in Melbourne Thursday night in a pretty, pretty boring nil-all draw. But it was, it's quite hot in here in Australia. Obviously, we're heading into summer now, so it was the humidity and everything starting to rise up. But then it's nothing compared to tomorrow night's game where he's playing in Bahrain. So he's gone from Middlesbrough to Melbourne, Australia, to Bahrain, back to Barra this Friday in his world travels. So it's incredible in the space of 2 weeks to go, and not only, just the flight time and the travel time itself, but like different time zones. Obviously where, he's up at, I think he plays 5 a.m. my time tomorrow in Bahrain. And it's obviously he's just come and played in Melbourne on Thursday night where it was normal time. And, and then is that normal time because he's coming from Barra where it's, so the time zone adjustment and all that sort of stuff is something I think that needs to be taken in consideration as well with like Vic was saying, true right as well with the injuries and the amount of, minutes these boys are playing. It's crazy, especially for Australia, because we're on the opposite side of the world. Any Australian that plays in any European league has got to travel so ridiculously far, especially when it's a home tie, down here in Australia. And at the moment, it's not even friendlies; it's our World Cup qualifiers. It's getting Australia into the World Cup, so it's massive for our nation, which isn't very strong on football still. So. Yeah, look, it's been, he played full 90 minutes. I'm guessing, he's very instrumental to Tony Vidmar, the new coach's plans. He said he's the key, he's the linchpin for that midfield. He's, playing just behind the striker and doing very well. So he's very big in terms of the Socceroos plans. And, I think it was good of Michael Carrick just to be able to rest him in that Luton game, as you can see with squad depth, and we can still go on and win 5-1 without him sort of thing. So, yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks, that's for sure for him. But it's come thick and fast, and I think all the international boys, Aidan Morris off to America, we know what's happened there. Izzy Jones and all the likes there as well. Senny Dieng, there's the thing with Middlesbrough Football Club with our success is we've got a lot of international players because we're the top end of the Championship trying to push into the Premier League, and there's a good majority of our squad that have been away and had to travel. So. Yeah, it's a lot of football, and this is where the squad depth that Michael Carrick talks about is going to come into action.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, because we'll talk a little bit about Borough's upcoming games in a little while, but you've got so many midweek games coming up. I think we've got five games coming up in the space of, I think is it 17 days or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's coming thick and fast now, and you've got the Christmas period. There's three games over Christmas and New Year. It's coming. The squad depth is going to be tested to its full. But, let's depress ourselves in a little bit, when we're talking about stuff. Let's get some Christmas presents sorted. So, right, Vic, the idea of the book, obviously, the legacy numbers, when the club started, was it something you approached the club about? Did the club approach you? How did the idea come about of you putting the legacy numbers into writing for us all to enjoy?
Well, it always needed doing. It was always on the long list of things to do because the old Borough A to Z is 20 years out of date and we've had 300 players since then. Midway through last season, Matt Barber from the press office realised that we were like up to 985 players. And obviously, if you're bringing out a compendium of players, then obviously the 1,000 is a wonderful milestone. But we did panic a bit towards the end of last season because suddenly Michael Carrick started giving all the young lads a debut and we got up to 999. On the last day, I was terrified he was going to throw someone else on. We'd lose that selling point and that the hook. Obviously, Aidan Morris became the 1,000th on the first day of this season. Otherwise, we would have to, the print schedule might have been thrown some confusion. But yeah, it's an obvious thing to do. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of hard work. Not so much writing it, because a lot of these things write themselves, but it's the fact checking, especially once you go beyond the 30s, 20s. There's so little paperwork around football clubs. I mean, now, obviously, we know everything about players. We see their YouTube clips. We, you know, within seconds of someone being linked with the Borough, we know every club they've ever played for and their background story. But in the early days of football, it really wasn't like that. I mean, people would appear from nowhere, sign for the club, maybe only play two games, then disappear again. And when clubs put in their team sheets, the only thing they have to put on is their name. They get signed off by the secretary. And for a lot of clubs, that's the only paperwork. And it's quite hard to track some players down, especially when in the early days of football, it was like such a flux. It was like the Wild West bureaucratically. Players could sign one for one club and then they'd disappear and pop up playing for a non-league club or in Scotland, or they'd go abroad. And it was so hard to keep tabs of them. And then the old system of signing and retaining players meant that once you signed for a club, you were effectively there for 1,000 generations, unless they chose to release you. And you get little anomalies where players might play half a dozen games for Borough, then disappear. And then 7 years later, they pop up again and play another three games because there's an injury crisis. And you have to make sure that, you know, it's the same player and not a new player, especially when you've got quite common names. The number of Joe Murphys we've had and Tommy Smiths, or someone might be a William when they sign the first time, but then become a Billy next time they come. So we had to check. It was a bit like, you know, like Santa Claus. We checked the list and we checked it twice. I'm trying to find out whether they're naughty or nice. Big praise for Sean Wilson and Colin Galloway, who are vital members of Middlesbrough's Anorak community, who had separate databases. And when we started the project, obviously, you've got to get the numbers right. Once you start people dishing numbers out to people, you've got to get them right. So we had several long meetings discussing the criteria and checking databases against each other and going through. And to make sure everything was right, we had to try and get as many birth dates as possible and facts that we could verify and check that this player did actually move to Scunthorpe like we thought he had. And then you start to check and you realise it's a different player. This bloke's, we thought he's got to Scunthorpe, he's actually joined West Ham, played 200 games for Bolton, he's got a stand named after him. You know, so a lot of the background digging, Colin's hobby is to check Borough players from the past. And we filled in loads and loads of gaps. The starting point was the old Borough Bible, Borough A to Z. And there were so many mistakes in it. Not disparaging the people who put it together in the first place, because you can only work with what you've got. And the beauty now of the internet is that every club has their Sean's and Collins, and there's a whole neural network of anoraks around the country who love their club and have spent a lot of time building up databases. So it's much easier now to find all these bits and pieces and put all the jigsaw together. So it was fascinating stuff, but it took a lot longer than I thought it was going to. And it was hard work, but I'm really pleased with the product. I think it's a really nice, bright and breezy book. You can dip into it. You look into a page for your favourite and then you glance onto to someone else on that page, and then before you know it, you've read 20 pages and you go down a rabbit hole. And what I like about it is that obviously the players are, we focus all our attention and all our relationship with the club and all our memories around individual players. And some players encapsulate whole periods of history. So you've got for instance, and often they get overlooked. You have someone like Curtis Fleming, for instance, who probably would laugh at the idea that he was a legend But he's played 300 games for the club. He played in three promotions. He played at, three times at Wembley. He played at the old club, the new club. You know, he is living history.
Yeah.
And then when you look back to other generations, other decades, other periods, there are other players like that who completely encapsulate the history of the club. The number one on this list is Harry Oldport. Harry Oldport played for Borough against Ionopolis at the very, very early flux of football when there was a battle going on between amateurism and professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very much strident. He was an evangelist for Borough. He was a staunch amateur. So he played in the amateur FA Cup winning side in 1895, 1898. He played the first game in the Football League. He played the last game at Linthorpe Road. I mean, this guy's living history. And it's really important that we remember these people because they're all they all contribute to the threads of the great tapestry that's our club. This is how this is our story. So I thought it's really important to do it and to give these guys justice for their contribution that they've made. Obviously, there's 1,000 stories, 1,000 players, 1,000 stories. You can't give it give them all a page each because otherwise the book would be like a telephone directory. So a lot of it's about what you leave out. But there are some incredible stories about former Borough players. Do you want me to rabbit on? Do you want me to throw a few at you?
Oh, no, crack on. You say, you know, you're doing your big sell here. You know, it's your book. It's a fantastic book. You say, I can only commend what you've done. But yeah, crack on. You say, if you've got some stories, please
do. There's a guy called Fred Pentland who is number 140. Fred Pentland was a winger. He played for QPR. He played for Arsenal. And he joined Borough in period just before the First World War. So he played in the side that the season before Borough's best ever finish, when they finished third. It was the team that was going to win the title if it hadn't been for the Kaiser. When he left Borough, he took up coaching and he went to Germany where he was penciled in to coach the German national team in the Olympics. Obviously, war broke out. He was interned with thousands of other British citizens in Germany who were engineers and road builders and teachers and people like himself, footballers. They all got interned. There was 5,000 people interned in this camp, Ruhrleben near Berlin. Another one of the people who interned was Steve Bloomer, who was he was the Edwardian Alan Shearer. He was a goal machine for England. He played for Borough as well. And he played alongside Alf Common, the world's most expensive footballer. So the two of them are in this internment camp. And to pass the time and to keep morale up, they formed a football league. There was dozens and dozens of teams in divisions with promotion and relegation. And everyone was taking it really seriously. And in there, he refined his coaching skills and his man management skills. After the war, he managed the French side to the Olympics. And then he moved to Spain. And in Spain, he is an absolute giant figure. He's revered in Spain. He's considered to be the man that introduced what we now think of the Spanish tiki-taki, possession, fast-moving football. There's a massive statue of him outside Athletic Bilbao Stadium. He won the title with them twice and five Copa del Reyes, including two doubles. Then he went to Atletico Madrid. And did the same thing there, won the title there. And then he managed the first Spanish national team, the Spanish national team that became the first team to beat England, a non-UK team to beat England. Absolute giant of the game. So little things like that's all part of our history. I mean, I'm not saying he was a giant when he was at Borough. He only played like 100 games over two seasons, but he's a really important football figure that has gone through our club. And there's so many people like that with incredible stories. And I've tried to dig out as much colour and as much human interest from all these individuals as possible and put it at your fingertips because it's a really, because it's in A to Z, It's a nice, easy, user-friendly, searchable format. And the only pity is that I couldn't do so much more about some of these players with incredible stories.
Well, we have over the years, haven't we? We've had some world-class players for our club, you know. And you're right. I mean, the history of our club, although it's not decked in silverware and trophy success, but we've achieved a hell of a lot for a small town.
Well, one of the oldest clubs in the world, and an important club in some ways, because obviously when the battle was going on between professionalism and amateurism, Borough made a decision that they were going to stay amateur, and they became one of the biggest, most powerful amateur teams in the country. And when the professional sides started beating the Posh Boys and the Blackburns and Darwins, and that started beating Old Etonians and Wanderers, the FA set up their own separate competition, which was the FA Amateur Cup, thinking that they would dominate it again. And then Borough came and won it twice in the first 4 years. That wasn't part of the script. So I think the Posh Boys were quite relieved when Borough decided to go professional and left it then for another couple of years. But only a couple of years, because down the line, Bishop Auckland and Crook and Stockton were coming to take control of that. If you look at those early years in the Football League, Borough played a major role. I mean, obviously, Ayresome Park became the template for the new generation of football stadiums. And there's a lot of familiar stuff going to around that time. The new state-of-the-art stadium, the move to catapult the club into the big time by huge spending. And if you think about the Janino Ravanelli era, where Borough were throwing money, they did exactly the same in 1904, 1905. They bought Steve Bloomer, they bought Alf Common. There was money flying around all over the place. Several inquiries, two chairmen banned, two managers banned, under the counterpayments, a match-fixing scandal. It was all going on. I mean, Ayresome Park for the first 10 or 15 years, between when it opened and the First World War, it was carnage. It was like a story every week was coming out. It was incredible, a really vibrant time in our history, and that's possibly in another book in there somewhere. But you know, I'll put that on the list.
Vic, I've got a question for you, mate. I mean, obviously, the starting back in 1899, you said Harry Allport there with number one. I mean, going, you said you had obviously some two offsiders that were able to help you, but going, obviously, this list goes through two world wars. I mean, you know, two absolutely significant world-shaping events. I mean, how hard was it getting some of that data, but also those stories from, you know, those war encampments and stuff like that through the world wars and cataloguing the Borough through two world wars?
Well, we took a decision very early on that it was going to be Football League first team games, competitive fixtures, because during the wars, both wars, football continued, but not on the same basis, because you couldn't really have players registered because so many of them were involved in the military and they were moving around from one part of the country to the next. And, you know, you can't compromise national security and say that you can't go and join the D-Day mission because you've got, because you're away at Charlton next week. and the normal registration rules were abandoned during the war. So teams still function, but with guest players. And Borough were a really strong side in the war, in the wartime leagues, because just down the road from here, there's a place called Catterick, which is one of the biggest training bases. So on the doorstep, Borough had tens of thousands of young men, including loads of professional footballers who were being kept away from active service, and they were doing training because obviously they were professional athletes. So during the war, we had people like Stanley Matthews was playing, Matt Busby was playing, you know, like all the big names, hundreds and hundreds of players. But from one week to the next, the team would be completely different because they were on guard duty or they'd been sent to do an exercise in Scotland or whatever. So we abandoned any notion of including them in this list. But again, it's really worthy of a separate book and a separate yeah. consideration, because players were it was like pickup games. Like George Hardwick, for instance, won two wartime cups with Chelsea because he was based somewhere down south.
Wow.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It's the amount of stories that'll come out. You couldn't mention them within this book, but we've got 150-year anniversary coming up very soon. Imagine, there'll be something. I'm not trying to push it. Something in there to write a book about that.
Yeah, we'll probably do two or three major things to tie in with the 150th anniversary. There's plenty of other things to do. One of the things I want to do is update the sort of Borough Bible with every match, every season, every scorer for the entire 150 years. So, wow. That's like it's on a grid format so that you can get so much information. But again, you're looking at 130 years. So that's a lot of pages. That's a lot of pages and a lot of writing. So I better crack on with that. So,
I'll tell you now,
how long from sort of the initial idea until the finished article, how long did the three of you lads work on it?
Well, the idea was kind of bubbling around. I started doing the serious writing after the Carling Cup anniversary because I did that programme that went with that. Mm. And then it was just like heads down for pretty much 6 months solid. Which was, it's hard work, but it's easy in the sense that you know what you need to do. A lot of them do write themselves, but it's just the fact checking, going over absolutely everything and making sure the numbers were all right. If we discover
the family will be relieved to have you back again doing your normal family duties.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I'm at the club. I work full time, so it's like a 8 till 4 every day. So you get through loads, and there's like weeks where you just drift off and you go to the library and go through all the old gazettes and stuff. And we have a lot of kind of our own archives. It's just checking everything against it because so much was slapdash. I mean, we live in a world now that is the information economy is so heavy, where we know absolutely everything about everyone. But in the old days, footballers they weren't celebrities, they were just ordinary employees, and they were disposable. And it was very, very hard to find any background information. So when a player turned up, the old bird from the Gazette would like ask the club, and they'd say, "Oh yeah, he's a fullback. Yeah, he's from Glasgow." And then he'd ask the player, and he'd say, "Oh, I'm a wing half, and I'm from Edinburgh." So like, everything has to be checked so many times. And the way to do that is obviously look at his old clubs. Where did he play there? Look at his future clubs. What position did he play there? And then come to an informed decision as to which one has the strongest case, because nothing was ever definitive in the way it is now, where everyone insists that, what foot do you use? Where do you play? Blah, blah, blah. What top trumps cards with your speed and weight and height. And it wasn't like that then. It was very, very low. Information about players was low on everyone's priority. And football was very, very underreported. We obsess about things now. There's a million podcasts, So we obsess about every detail. Whereas in those days, it'd be a match report, and on Monday, six paragraphs about, no analysis, no tactical discussion, no engagement with the supporters. And then on Monday, you get six paragraphs about the match, confirming the scorer because you might have got it wrong on the Saturday. And then it was cricket and racing and rowing. And then the next thing you would read is Thursday, when the selection committee, not the manager, the selection committee told you what the team was going to be for Saturday. When the reporter went to the team went to the match on Saturday, they assumed that they were working the team sheet that the selectors had given them on the Thursday. But anything could have happened. Two new signings could pop up and you wouldn't know about it until the following Monday. It was just crazy. And all our assumptions of how information works are just nonsense when they're applied to those days.
Vic, with the presenting of the actual legacy numbers, the clubs made absolutely fantastic presentations to all, to obviously the past players that are still around. How hard was it getting in touch with the past players? Obviously, the more notable ones are probably easier to find, but obviously there's some names in there that maybe have played one or two games for Borough, and trying to get them a legacy number. Is there still a search going on, or have you covered most players now?
There's not a definitive way of doing it. Obviously, opportunities present themselves. Like, for instance, Gareth Southgate and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank were at Rockcliffe with England over the summer. So that's a perfect opportunity. And then some of the players were come to reunion dinners, for instance. Yeah. That's a perfect opportunity. So I think it will be a case of filling in the gaps as we go along. I mean, obviously, Janinho came over. Fantastic opportunity to give him his.
Yeah.
It would be more like, it's more likely to be done like that. We have had a lot of correspondence from people who are related to our players who are keen to get theirs done. And again, some of those gaps have been filled in. Joe Murphy, who was the scorer of Borough's first debut hat-trick.
Yep.
His granddaughter was presented theirs with by Steve Gibson last month. We've had Mogger, Proc and Bernie all on the pitch together because obviously Mogger was coming, so it seemed like a timely thing to do. So I think you'll find quite a lot of that over the coming years. Football's a little village. It's not a problem getting in touch with people. And a lot of the older players are, and their families are aware of the programme, and they've been in touch, and I think we'll do it as and when we can, but to no defined timetable. Ideally, you'd like to get them all, but you know, once you read through the book, you'll realise that some people just drop off the radar completely.
Oh, fantastic.
No, well, that's it. They say when I was going through the players, you know, there's some that you forget about. There's some that you think, oh God, yeah, I forgot he actually put a Borough shirt on. You know, in the past and obviously more recent as well. When you were talking about collecting all the information, getting the players, you know, talk about how difficult it was when you actually started writing the monologues for each player. Is there certain players that stuck out? I know you mentioned Fred Pentland there, that are a bit more enjoyable writing about. Obviously, some you can just put, yeah, you played so many games, scored so many goals, played in that team. Was there players that stood out and you thought, I quite enjoyed writing about him? That was quite fascinating.
Oh, there's some great. I mean, obviously, Fred Pentland was a brilliant one.
Yeah.
I've been a journalist a long time. You know, everyone's got a story. Absolutely everyone's got a story. And once you start digging, these little nuggets come out. And one of the problems is, what do you leave out? That's a real thing. I mean, there's a guy, Gypsy Joe Frail, number 43.
Genuinely, love that.
He lived in a caravan. You know, he was a real gypsy. He used to play with a knotted handkerchief and all the cliches. And he used to supplement his wages by doing a beat the keeper stall on all the local markets. So the St. Hilda's Market, Doggy Market, Stockton Market, he'd turn up with his caravan and goalposts and charge punters to have a crack at him. And he used to supplement his wages like that. He was actually a penalty keeper specialist, and he saved 3 in one match against Brentford. So obviously the odds were stacked in his favour and things like that.
Wow.
But he used to disappear for weeks at a time because he was a proper Romany. So he'd disappear to go to like Appleby Horse Fair and potato picking week at Scarborough. And then the club would say, where is he? he also had a colourful relationship with the local constabulary. So quite often he missed matches as well because he'd been remanded the night before. So colourful.
Wow.
A guy called Joe Gettins, who had played again in the old club. What number is he?
Number 2, was it? Yeah.
Yeah. So he played in the old club. He was a top teacher and he worked in a public school in London. And while he was an avowed amateur, he played amateur football for England. He was a really, really good footballer, but he was an amateur, and he played in the 95 Amateur Cup. And he went out to London. He was a teacher at a top public school. And while he was there, played for Corinthians, who are probably the most famous amateur team in the world. Played in two FA Cup semi-finals with Millwall. But he used to come home during the school holidays and play for Borough because he was still on their books. In terms of the Football League, he was registered for Borough. So he used to come home, and in typical Teesside fashion, he'd come home at Christmas, visit his mum's Christmas dinner, Boxing Day, he's played for the Borough. That's just fantastic. And this went on for several years because he was a top, top player. And if someone turns up and says, I'm available for a match, you know, get him in there.
Was there many entries into the boat, into the thousand, where they just made a single appearance?
Oh, loads, absolutely loads. I mean, we'll know so many of them. You know, John Eustace, 3 minutes, one booking. The way at Liverpool. I mean, you'll have been there. Loads of people who've come off the bench, young lads come off the bench, 15 minutes in the Anglo-Italian Cup. And the next thing they're playing in the Northern League. So many like that. The first couple of years when Borough stepped up from the amateur game to professionalism, the manager there, John Robson, very, very quickly realised that a lot of the players that he had were nowhere near good enough. And he just went on a flurry of signing people. And that first season, they got through 38 players. And the vast majority of those only played one match. It very quickly realised they were no good. So there's a lot of people like that. I mean, all the Alex Nimleys, you know, you'll know half of the names. So it's quite nice to put flesh on that because these people become folklore, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes on the bus on a way home from the matches, once we've had a few drinks, we try to top trump each other with the most obscure Borough player. You know, it's quite fun. Yeah. So I'm gonna practice by reading the book, and then I'll be able to.
He's cheating now.
I'll be able to win. Yeah, the shots are on you. Come on.
There's a great one for Rye, Peter Wilson. One game for Borough, 1968, fullback, nowhere near good enough. So he bombed out at Borough, played at Gateshead for one season, and then emigrated to Australia. He became naturalised in 1970. He was the Australian Player of the Year. He played for a team called Marconi.
Yes, yes.
He became naturalised. He converted from fullback to centre-back, grew his hair, became like a really aggressive centre-back. And he captained Australia in the 1974 World Cup. And West Germany. And then became disillusioned with fame and football. And he went off to live a biker recluse lifestyle on a on a outpost near Wollongong.
Yeah. That's just near me.
He's like heavily tattooed biker.
Jeez. That is incredible, isn't it? I mean, just finding these types of stories, and obviously going back and finding the first Aussie, the first American, the first, you know, and these first nationalities to come to the small club of Middlesbrough, the small town of Middlesbrough, big club, but to go back and find, you know, these stories and these, you know, what's happened after them. And, you know, it's incredible.
There's the headshot of him when he was at Borough is like a smart, short back and sides, looks quite meek, like he's his school shot. And then the next picture I can find in the archives is him shaking hands with Franz Beckenbauer, looking like he's been playing for the Grateful Dead, with really long, shaggy hair.
How old will he be now? Is he still alive, Victor?
I think he's still alive, yeah. But I did a piece on him maybe 10 years ago, where he completely dropped out of society. And he lived on one of these like one horse outposts out in the bush.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
And there's certainly a few of them. But yeah, there's dozens like that.
Incredible.
This is why I love this book, because you know I'm massive with my numbers. I love all my stats and things like that, and some of the stories that you see behind them. But you know, I'll start with you, Rye. Obviously, you know, we know the player that got you into Middlesbrough, Mark Swarter. Is there any other players that you now think of since your time? You think, obviously, Riley McGree, I get that one. But, you know, any other, you know, you've got so many Aussie players that play for the Borough. Are there ones that anyone more that stick out for you that you think I want to read a bit more about?
I mean, the one that I obviously, that never, Massimo Luongo. I mean, he was at the club, never stepped foot on the pitch for the Borough under Chris Wilder, but obviously he's gone on now to be Ipswich, one of the, he's in the Premier League with Ipswich
Alongside
now.
Sam
So
Morsy.
as exactly
That's right,
against Sam Morsy,
yeah.
who was
Madness.
deemed not good enough. We knocked him down to League One, and now he's, player of the year for both of them. So look, there's Aussies that you it's funny that you connect Australia with English football clubs. And a lot when you walk around Australia, it's your classic. It's your Man United, it's your Chelsea. So you've got to understand, in Australia, football's probably fourth or fifth tier in terms of sports. So we love our cricket, we've got AFL, we've got NRL. They are, they get all the money from the government and all the TV deals and everything like that. And then you've got this lowly A-League, and then you've got football sort of fifth or sixth tier sort of thing. So look, it is, it is growing, but it's very, very slow. And if there's any other sort of sport on, it sort of struggles. So to be an Australian that loves Middlesbrough Football Club, which is outside of that Man United and Chelsea and stuff like that, it's actually very rare, but we're starting to see a lot more. And it's thanks to Middlesbrough's history in Australian players. I mean, you've got your Mark Schwartzes, but you go back to Vidmar, you got young Reece Williams that people might have forgotten about, Luke Wilkshire. Do you know what I mean? There's Aussies. Scott McDonald came through, for goodness. There's Aussies that have been in and around the Borough for a long, long time. And we've got a good history with having some Australian players play for this club. And I think that only strengthens my bond if it needed to be strengthened with this club, because we have got a very big Australian player history. And and hearing that story there from Vic, is just probably one of them, and it's incredible. So yeah, look, obviously, current players are as easy to remember, but going back and listening to and finding the stories of how back, in the early 2000s or even the 1990s, when football in Australia would have been worse than it is now. And I'm telling you right now, it's still not good, but back then it would have been worse. You know what I mean? And there were people that were scrutinized for playing soccer because it wasn't, you're not playing Aussie rules, or you're not playing, what all the kids were playing at school. So it's incredible to see.
No, absolutely is. It's fascinating. As I say, Vic, I'll give you the final word on the book. Give you your 30 seconds to absolutely plug the life out of it. Tell everyone to buy it if they haven't. I'd back it as well, because I say it is a fantastic read. But I'll hand the reins to you. One
Yeah, I mean,
last plug.
obviously it is a fantastic read, but it's also it's an at your fingertips guide to the history of the club. I think it's an essential book if you're a Borough fan, and entertaining as well. It's a nice, easy read. I tell you what, it is the absolute perfect present for the Borough fan in your life. And if that's you, then treat yourself. £22, club shop, online. Absolute bargain. You know, it makes
Yeah,
sense.
and it's
Absolutely.
so easy to get sucked into the book as well. Once you think, oh, I'll just read a couple of players, and all of a sudden you're like, you're 10 players, you're 15 players, you're 20 players, and you think, oh, where did that hour and a half go? Because you just get sucked in by all. If you're fascinated by numbers and the backstories behind the players, you know, that put the jersey on, then yeah, the book's for you. It's absolutely for you. And if you're listening to this and thinking, oh, my partner's, he might be interested in that. Just go and buy it. Just go and buy it. Say it's
Absolutely, yeah.
quick, more than 20
Yeah,
quid.
I mean, my sort of earliest memories was sort of late in the Stan Anderson sort of era, and then Jack Charlton, and from then, Jack Charlton, obviously, we had success. So when I get the book, I know I'll get it. If somebody doesn't get me it for Christmas, which I know they will, I'll get it myself. that's where I'll start from, if you know what I mean. I'll pick my point and I'll start from that era. But like Steve says, no doubt you'll go back, because really, I mean, we're all Borough fans, we all love this club, but I don't know a great deal about our history before Stan Anderson. Obviously, the main players you do know.
Yeah, you know the Giants.
You know your clubs.
You do, yeah.
You know your Mannions, you know your... Yes, you know that. But it's all the other players who played with them, who played before them, that I can educate myself on. And I can throw some on our Top Trumps game on the way home from the matches.
Except everyone will have the book. So.
Everyone's like, hang
I
on.
Hope so, mate. I hope it's a bestseller.
Yeah, we've got me, Phil Donovan. You'll never beat me at that game, and you know you won't.
Well, we'll see at Oxford. Get yourself clued up, because I'm going to.
I'll quite happily win a few shots over here. That doesn't bother me one bit.
And also Threads of History as well, Vic. I must commend you on that book as well. I mean, I think obviously the Legacy book is incredible, but if for those that maybe want to look into what, you know, how the shirt of Middlesbrough, and the history of that, I think that's a fantastic read as well.
Yeah, and that's not just really about the shirts. It's an entire social history of Middlesbrough. Some of the background stuff in that was really, really enjoyable doing. And again, hopefully it's an entertaining and very readable.
Yeah.
I sneak things in so people learn by osmosis.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, it was mentioned earlier that the 150th anniversary coming up very soon. Obviously, the club are going to celebrate it massively. A new crest. There'll be commemorative shirts, I would imagine. There'll be all sorts going on. So, you know, and if you've got another piece of literature coming out regarding the 150-year anniversary, I'm sure we'll have you back on and you do your sales pitch again.
I'll probably have three or four out before then, mate.
Exactly. It's, you know, the history of the club will always grow. The history of the club will always be there. It's so fascinating to read. And for every generation as well, just to look back and see what, you know, what their dads, what their granddads saw.
Yeah, I think,
you know, what got them into the club. And it just gives you a bit of a background, right? You know, why does he keep mentioning Alan Foggin? Why does he keep talking about him? Go and have a read, go and have a look, you know.
Exactly.
So, and then, you know, they bring us back to present day. We're back in football action. We've got Oxford on Saturday. Massive game. I never thought I'd ever say that about Oxford, but it is. John Don, new ground for a lot of fans. Obviously, you know, we've never been to the Kassam. A lot of fans have never been to Oxford. Not academically. I'm not saying people are thick, by the way. I'm just saying.
Well, I've never been to Oxford academically.
No, me neither. too many of them shots doing Top Trumps with you. But it's going to be a top day out. They say back by another full away end. A bit of a weird one. Three-sided ground.
Stadium. Yeah.
Yeah, with a car park. It's going to be a bit weird. Mm-hmm. But it's one I'm looking forward to, and one that surely we're going to stride in with a bit of confidence, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, we should be. You know, obviously we'll count the walking wounded and those who have just got back to Borough, like I mentioned, from a heavy schedule of flights and games. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's available for that game. But after a decent week before the international break, if we can get the win at Oxford, and then we've got two home games to follow, we could put ourselves in a pretty strong position.
We definitely could. I mean, one of the players you mentioned in there, Vic, obviously player 1,000, Aidan Morris, has come back. Hasn't come back as of yet. With a hoping, praying, it's a slight knock. But how impressed have you been this season with Aidan Morris? You know, he's come. We keep waxing lyrical about the guy. He's come from a league that's not as physical, not as demanding, but he's just took to it like it's nothing. He's just took it in his stride, and he just keeps getting better and better by each game.
I think he's fantastic. I think he ticks all the boxes for a championship player. He's got good engines. He can tackle. He's intelligent. He can pass the ball. I've been very impressed with his attitude and application, charging 40 yards back to put in a tackle on the edge of the box. He's slotted right in. And people sometimes underestimate how big a culture clash it is, not just moving to a different type of football, a different intensity, but to go to a different country with a different lifestyle. And a lot of people struggle to make that step. And a lot of people, you don't see what they can do until the second season. But he's just stepped in and he's looked every inch a championship player, dominating games. He reminds me a little bit of Robbie Musto in terms of the ground he covers, and he's got everything in his skill set. You know, if he's not available for a while, that'd be a big miss. But he, you know, for me, he's been an absolute find of the season.
Mm-hmm. We also mentioned the likeness. He's a modern day Musto, purely and simply because you know there's not going to be a bad game. Some games he'll be better in than others, but he's a solid 6.5 to 7 out of 10 every game. And sometimes he steps up even greater. I agree with you. He's definitely in the Robbie Musto mold.
Yeah, absolutely fine. I couldn't agree more with you on that one. To be fair, Robbie Musto, when I was growing up, was one of my favourite footballers for the Borough. I absolutely loved watching him. Unsung hero. Did the job that nobody else wanted to do. Just got stuck in. My kind of football. Yeah. I loved watching him as a kid.
And there's the Oxford United link as well, isn't there?
Exactly. There you go. See, all interlinked somehow. You know, we find little links everywhere. Ryan, you mentioned about, you know, Riley not getting back till Friday. Is that your way of telling us don't really count on seeing him on Saturday?
Oh, look, I don't, you know, I'm not the selector. You know, the club officials and the medical department and all that will give them the once over. I mean, look, we're going to be quite thin. I mean, the news coming out from Dom Shaw, as much as I love him, I've had to mute him on Twitter because he keeps breaking my heart. With, you know, losing Hayden Hackney with the ankle, and then you got Aidan Morris with the knee. You know, Riley's got another game to get through tomorrow morning. But you know, so do all the other international stars. You know what I mean? That we've got, they've all got another game before they can, you know, even think about the game this weekend. We're starting to talk about it. You know, there is still a lot of international games to be played midweek. So, yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting one to see who's fit. And, you know, obviously Michael Carrick might not know that until they all get back into Middlesbrough, you know, on Thursday/Friday, I'd say it's when they roll in, and then you've got to turn them around for Saturday. I think the best thing we've seen and we've got this season is squad depth. I mean, I think we've had an excellent summer where we didn't see too many outgoings, and we were able to add to what was already a pretty decent squad sort of thing. And then you look at the likes of Latte Lath and Tommy Conway, you can play, you know, they're both top strikers coming off the bench. I mean, if we do lose Hayden Hackney and Aidan Morris, as influential as they are, Dan Balassa, who scored his first goal just a couple of weeks ago, and Johnny Howson, you know, who's at club captain, sitting there ready to go as well. So, you know, and young Law McCabe can't be forgotten about as well. When he's come on, I think he's been absolutely at championship level as well. So you look down the list and you've got stars sitting there ready and waiting, and you think about, you know, the past couple of games, you go, why is he on the bench? You know what I mean? We beat Luton without Riley, you know what I mean? 5-1. So the squad depth, I think, this season is always going to be challenged in a tough championship, you know, battle. But this is more than ever. You know, we've got these three fast games. Then we've got Leeds and Burnley, you know, back-to-back sort of thing as well. So, that you know, we've got, this is where the squad depth needs to, you know, to come into play, because it's, the games will come thick and fast. You know, there'll be always a tough opponent in the championship, and we're going to need each and every one of the squad members to get us through a tough period and hopefully, you know, stop flirting around that promotion area and get us right in there and start sort of looking behind us rather than counting who's above us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it.
Law McCabe, Vic. Law McCabe, Vic, 990 what?
999, wasn't he?
Was he?
998.
998.
Very good. You passed the test.
But just before I ask the lads, obviously, about their predictions, JD, the most important one for me, I mean, he's playing as we speak, Ben Doak. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody saw what he did on, was it Friday night? He did.
Yeah.
Absolutely ripped Gvardiol apart. You know, people were raving about him. People were scared, oh, Liverpool are going to recall him. But I don't know if you agree with me. I wouldn't recall him if I was Liverpool. I'd leave him where he is. He looks settled. He looks happy. And he's only going to get better. He's only going to flourish a bit more in our team.
He's obviously flourishing, yeah, because he's improved immensely in the short spell he's been here. Obviously, he'll have a target on his back now. You know, teams may double up on him. He might find a closer presence if anybody can keep up with him. But if teams do double up on him, it means that we've got a free man elsewhere. We need to find a way around that. If other teams in the Championship have got defenders who are as fast as him and can keep up with him, then it'll be a good contest.
Exactly. So, the left back for Oxford, he better get some sprints in this week because I think he's going to be for a bit of a tricky game on Saturday.
He's assisted the goal for Scotland this morning. He's just assisted John McGinn to get in now, Ben Doak. So, it's incredible.
Kids magic. Kids absolutely magic. And don't fall in love with a lone player. Don't look at Ben Dolan. Keep your eyes away. He's absolutely brilliant. But before we go, it's obviously, you know, our charity is in mind. So I'll start with you, John Don. Matt, a score prediction, anytime scorer. Let's have it.
I'm going to go 2-0 Middlesbrough. And I'll go Latte Laugh. Not good odds, I would imagine, but I just feel as though, he'll start, he'll score. Fingers crossed.
Well, considering John was sat at £0 and zero pence for our lovely charity so far this season, I think we'll take that £20 if it comes in.
So, yeah, that's right.
Vic, I'll come to you.
3-1, Azaz. He's on a roll.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Mm-hmm. He is on a roll, to be fair. He's one player that's really he's improved so much this season as well. I've really enjoyed watching for his last, especially the last few games. I say we mentioned last week, he's made that number 10 role so much his own now. He's fantastic. I love him. Ryan, come to you.
Yeah, I've got to agree with Vic. I was thinking 3-1. After the past couple of games against QPR and Luton, you know, I'm trying to keep calm and not say that it's going to be 8-0. But yeah, look, we're flying, and I think Bergzorg will get the goal on a 3-1 victory for the weekend. He's had a good break. He was on fire against Luton. I think he'll keep his place, and Bergzorg will get another one and continue the Borough on.
Nice one, Steve. What's yours?
I was going to say we've absolutely outnumbered you here, John Don, because I've gone 3-1 as well.
Yes.
Well.
I've got Tommy Conway. I think Conway are going to go on Saturday. He's settled quite nicely. He's got a few goals under his belt. It seems like that kind of game where he'll pinch one. So yeah, there you go. There's mine.
We go for 3 wins. Is that that's all right? That'll do. The most important thing is, you know, we continue picking up points. If we can play well and win, brilliant. But just winning is the bottom line, and that's what we've got to do.
Exactly. That's the most important bit. And, you know, it comes off last backside and we win 1-0. That'll do. I'll happily have
it. 2-0. I said 2.
We need points.
Just the 3 points will do me. A few drinks on the wheel to celebrate that, I'll be more than happy. But just like that, an hour flies by and we're all done.
Can I just quickly plug the Tony Mowbray Q&A session on Thursday? We are going, aren't we? So, but I know there's only a few tickets left, and Steve Smith from Eston Events Centre has just asked me to remind people. Tickets are £20. Get them on the night or get them on Skiddle, I think it's called. But that'll be fantastic. I mean, who doesn't love Tony Mowbray? So we'll be going along. So if you're at a loose end on Thursday, get yourself down to the Eston Events Centre and listen to the man himself.
Exactly. What a great name for a website that is, by the way. Skiddle. Love that. Are you going that one, Vic? Are you going on Thursday night?
No, Thursday's Fat Lads Football Night. So I'll be trundling along trying to kick fat loads.
Has it slowed down to walking football yet, Vic?
I never had any pace to lose, so for me, it's fundamentally changed the game.
There you go. I completely echo what John Don says. If you've got you know a few hours free on Thursday night, get yourself to the Eston event. So it's going to be a cracking night. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good insight. Like I say Jeff Witt is a really good host as well. You know, he can talk for years. You know, we've had him on here before. You can't trust him up sometimes, but he's really good at what he does. And that's why people book him. So, yeah, if you can get down there, sell them last few tickets, it'd be a great night for people to go to. But, yeah, so if you're going to that, we'll see you Thursday. John Don, I'll see you Thursday night. We'll have a couple of pints and a catch-up. You can tell me all about the Spanish Riviera.
I will.
And I'm not talking about the rainfall. So I'll catch you then. Rye, go and get some kip.
Thank you, mate. Off to work now. Ugh.
Always a pleasure to see you, my friend. Always good to catch up with you.
Thank you for having me always, mate.
Vic, thank you very much for popping on.
No problem.
The book, if you haven't got it, buy it.
There it is.
There you go. Product placement.
It's the Bible. The Borough Bible. It's a must-have.
Look at what you get for £22. An absolute bargain.
Exactly. So get yourself down the club shop, get yourself online, get it bought for your loved ones, for yourself. If you're a Borough fan, it is a must read. But and we'll catch up again next week. Hopefully, after another Borough win, we'll start climbing the table even more and getting towards them at the top that we don't talk about. So arrivederci, up the Borough, be seeing you. Ta-da.
Cheers.
Up the Borough.
Cheers, lads. Thanks a lot. Up the Borough.